And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My next guest is Mark Green, president of the International Republican Institute. Mark Green served under President Bush as U.S. ambassador to Tanzania. That was from August of 2007 to January of 2009. He is in Iowa today, speaking as part of the Des Moines Committee on Foreign Relations lecture series. His lecture titled, America's Role in the World. Ambassador Green, welcome to our program.
Ben, thank you. Good to be with you.
So let's start off with a little summary or a comment on your talk, America's Role in the World. How do you understand our country's role in the world today?
Well, and it really is a topic, I guess, up for discussion. If we take a look at 2016 and some of the debate that's been taking place around the country in the political arena, you know, I think Americans have raised questions about America's role. My own view is that America needs to play a role of engagement, standing with our allies, helping them to achieve their goals, helping to stabilize the world, and also trying to address those conditions like destitution, absolute poverty that can, I think, too easily be exploited by extremists. And as we all see in these challenging times, that's an important challenge that needs to be taken on.
You served in the Bush administration as his ambassador to Tanzania. I wonder, when we look at the past two administrations, this one with just a few months ago, 8 years under George W. Bush, nearly 8 years under President Obama, how would you describe the difference in their approaches to foreign policy?
Well, first off, when it comes to foreign policy with respect to the developing world, and I'm largely an Africanist by background and training, I view this as an area in which administrations build on each other. So President Bush, I think his great contribution with respect to the developing world was the AIDS Initiative, known as PEPFAR, the Millennium Challenge Corporation, which is a condition-based aid program that stands shoulder to shoulder with those nations undertaking good governance reforms. And we've seen President Obama build on those. He's continued those programs as well as introducing some of his own initiatives like Feed the Future, Power Africa. And so I view foreign policy, certainly with respect to the developing world, as an extension from one administration to another.
Mm-hmm. And you see there was great continuity between the Republican to a Democratic president, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think this is one of those areas that's a safe place for bipartisanship. We live in highly charged times, very obviously. We do in any campaign year, but I think we all recognize that 2016 has certainly had a lot of political edge. I think foreign policy is one of those areas where we should be able to and fortunately often do work shoulder to shoulder.
Mm-hmm. You describe yourself as an Africanist. It's too bad that we often have Africa in the news when there are crises there. I think you'll agree with that. Give us your overview, your idea of the state of democracy in African nations.
Well, I think it's a hopeful time in Africa for democracy. Certainly there are challenges, and we've seen democracy slide in some places. Open the newspaper and read the stories of the unrest in Zimbabwe, for example, or what's taking place in Sudan. Yet, on the other hand, we've seen democracy also flourish. Tunisia in North Africa is a case where, that's perhaps the best story coming out of the Arab Spring, but Tunisia is a case where multi-party democracy, still under challenge, but is beginning to rise, and I think offers great hope. I think the great challenge in Africa for democracy is very much a generational one. You know, the average age of an African is just under 19. The average age of an African head of state is just over 64. And that gap, to me, the disenfranchisement of young people, is the great challenge in African democracy. And that's certainly one of the areas that IRI, my organization, is working on, as well as our sister organization, NDI, the National Democratic Institute. And we've gotten quite good support from the Obama administration on this challenge. And so I'm hopeful that we'll be able to take it on and see improvements in the coming years.
You just joined us. Former Ambassador Mark Green is my guest, president of the International Republican Institute. He was U.S. Ambassador to Tanzania under President George W. Bush. Currently president of the International Republican Institute, not an institute or organization we hear a lot about, Ambassador Green. Tell us about it, because it sounds, you referenced that a little bit just a moment ago, it sounds like a partisan organization. Is it, when you go work around the world?
No, actually, it's a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization. It was essentially launched by Ronald Reagan's speech back in London. He was the first American president to speak to the British Parliament, and he talked about the mission of fostering the infrastructure of democracy around the world. And in coming months, Congress created the National Endowment for Democracy, and then Reagan called in a number of private sector leaders, which led to the establishment of IRI, my organization, the National Democratic Institute, what's now known as Solidarity, which was essentially AFL-CIO, and an extension of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And the four organizations work closely together, again, nonpartisan, and try to foster citizen-centered, citizen-responsive government in those places in the world where we're invited in. So we don't seek to impose anything. Instead, we try to help provide tools, experience, assistance, and training for citizen activists seeking to build citizen-centered government and citizen-responsive institutions.
It's been nearly 6 years since the so-called Arab Spring. That's been a challenge for establishing democracies in these countries. In fact, you could say it has been a disastrous failure, couldn't you?
Well, certainly there have been tremendous challenges and a lot of shattered dreams and hopes coming out of the Arab Spring. There have been successes. Tunisia, again, is one of them. In about a week's time, I'll be heading into that region. I'll be an election observer in Jordan, where they're having parliamentary elections. Jordan's under tremendous pressure as a result of the refugee crisis. That's the dynamics of the refugee migrant movements are putting tremendous pressure on institutions. I think what the Arab Spring teaches us, though, is that citizens want responsive government. Those were spontaneous uprisings of citizens looking for a better future and more hope. And obviously, unfortunately, what we've seen is a clampdown, the revenge of authoritarianism, if you will, in a number of places. I think going forward, we have to find ways of hopefully militarily stabilizing and destroying ISIS and violent extremism, but also looking for ways to take the institutions that are remaining, to build them, foster them, and make them citizen responsive, to try to build on the spirit of the Arab Spring and to realize its promise. But clearly these days, in the short run, a lot has fallen in those days, and there have been some dark days indeed.
Mark Green, I wanted to have you comment on, since we're 62 days away from our general election, presidential matchup in the major party category, at the focus of a lot of political attention. I wonder where you find yourself when you look at the foreign policy positions of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Donald Trump making three sort of key arguments time and again. He's made these for years and years. He's very unhappy with America's military alliances, feels the U.S. is overcommitted around the world. Economically, he feels that America is disadvantaged by the global economy. He's also a number of times been sympathetic to strongmen like Vladimir Putin. How do you see his foreign policy vision compared to Hillary Clinton? And she says America must be a leader in the world, and, quote, because when America fails to lead, we leave a vacuum. Where do you find yourself in those two visions?
Well, first off, let me emphasize again that IRI is not a partisan organization, and we're not involved in any of the campaigns. But what I can say, and I will say, is that I think that the debate we're seeing on the presidential level, on the national level, is hopefully one that reminds people of just how important American engagement is in the world. I'll just be very clear. For me personally, our alliances such as NATO are absolutely crucial extensions of American leadership. The world is safer. America is safer when we have strong, they're not just military, but they're also diplomatic coalitions and alliances. Secondly, with respect to trade, while there certainly have been some problems with some trade deals and some trade policies, I think we understand here in Iowa, and I'm from Wisconsin, I'm your neighbor to the east, We understand that 95% of the world's population lives outside the borders of our country. If my father-in-law, the corn and soybean farmer, can't export, can't sell his crops in foreign markets, he might as well plow the fields under. American engagement economically, diplomatically, and yes, from a security perspective, is very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the immigrant crisis, intervention overseas. We've seen NATO involved in a number of places. Also, U.S. policy towards immigrants, refugees. That's a major focus of the current time. Also, this year's presidential campaign. What do you see as the next president's challenges in this area?
Well, there are enormous challenges in almost every part of the world. And again, I think engagement is absolutely crucial. We shouldn't take our eye off the ball. The pressure on democratic institutions and our allies in Europe, I think, is something that we don't fully appreciate. When you take a look at Germany and what Germany is going through, the government of Angela Merkel, last year, 2015, they took in 1 million Syrian and Afghanistan refugees, putting tremendous pressure on that country. The refugee flows coming not just from Syria but from the region are destabilizing, and I think it is important for us to do what we can to support democracy, to stabilize those institutions. And with respect to the migrant crisis, the unaccompanied minor crisis that we've seen here in the U.S. may not be in the headlines these days, displaced by what's taking place in the Middle East and North Africa. We also have to recognize that the best way that we can be involved to stemming the flow of unaccompanied minors is to address some of the conditions that are driving refugees away from their homes and over the border. So one of the things that IRI does, we're very active in trying to build citizen security in Central America, working to reinforce municipal institutions, democratic institutions, so that people have a say in their own security, a say in their own government, to stabilize those communities. That's, I think, one of the most important things that we can do. But as you laid out in your question, those challenges are great in many parts of the world. And my point of view is that this is a time for the U.S. not to shrink away. There's no way that the world gets better if America recedes. This is a time for America, on a bipartisan basis, to stand with our friends and do what we can to lift up democratic institutions and to help good governance and to help alliances that are based upon the values that I think this country believes in and has believed in for a long time.
Just shy of 10 minutes left with former Ambassador Mark Green, currently president of the International Republican Institute. He's in Des Moines speaking as part of the Des Moines Committee on Foreign Relations speaker series, America's Role in the World, the title of his talk in Des Moines. Let's talk a little bit about U.S. aid to foreign governments, foreign entities. This is something that's also often brought up in political campaigns and understanding. Perhaps you can help us out here when a candidate says something like, why are we giving billions of dollars in assistance to foreign governments and their militaries when we have such a need here and such a great deficit?
Well, a couple of parts to the answer to that. Again, first off, we give foreign assistance in most of the places of the world because it serves our interests. Again, whether it be taking on destabilizing forces and destabilizing crises in other worlds that will lead to economic and security challenges that we'll have to take up at a later date, or whether it be reinforcing market-based economies so that we have places to sell our goods and trading partners to work with, we do these things because they serve our interests. It's not simply a giveaway. Secondly, another important part of this is to understand how it is that we provide foreign assistance. We rarely give foreign assistance directly to governments. Instead, we work through nonprofits. We work through organizations that try to deliver benefits directly to suffering individuals, to reinforce communities and to lift lives. I think this notion that somehow this is money that's simply provided to and the stereotype is hostile governments, it simply isn't true. Can we do it more effectively? I think we can. I think we need to reexamine foreign assistance and to make it stronger and more effective. But nobody should doubt how important our role is, and that if we take on challenges in the front and we take it on by addressing those positions that can conditions that can lead to despair, I think that suits our long-term interests and hopefully avoids confrontations in the future and having to deploy troops or having to take on those security issues.
I know one of the areas of work of the International Republican Institute, which you are president of, Mark Green, is the role of marginalized groups in the political processes in developing countries, women, young people in developing countries. Tell us a little bit about the problem as you see it there and the remedy.
Well, the problem is that, you know, our mission is to support representative democracy, citizen-centered government. In too many places in the world, important parts of communities are disenfranchised, and you pointed to women, and that's most often the community that's disenfranchised. We simply believe that no democracy can be said to be representative if it isn't listening to half its population. And we believe that no government can be truly effective in taking on the challenges that we all see around the world today if it doesn't turn to all of its population for the leadership that it needs. So what we do is we work with these communities to provide tools, training, assistance to enable them to take their seat at the table of representative government. So what we try to do is to increase the involvement and the investment of all parts of the community in government going forward, because we believe that's how you provide the best government, most effective government, stabilizing and sustainable government.
Where do you point to as the chief successes of the International Republican Institute up to this point?
Well, again, in most places where we're working with other organizations like our sister organization, the National Democratic Institute. We don't work on a partisan basis, but there are lots of good examples. I think Tunisia is one of those that I would point to. While it certainly has many challenges ahead of it, the fact that we're seeing elections that are credible elections that have the support of the people, I think is a very promising sign. But there are examples, places like Mongolia. Mongolia has been a representative democracy for over 25 years. Mongolia has only two countries on its border, Russia and China. There are tremendous authoritarian pressures, yet this former Soviet republic declared itself a democracy 25 years ago when we worked very closely with them to provide tools and training for leaders at all levels. It's now a strong enough democracy where it's actually creating its own version of IRI and seeking to assist democracies in the region. So that would be another example where we've seen great success.
Just 3 or 4 minutes left with Mark Green, president of the International Republican Institute, former ambassador to Tanzania. Let's talk a little bit about Americans' perceptions of the importance of international relations and foreign policy. It doesn't consistently rank at the top of voters' concerns. Why do you believe that voters aren't more concerned about these areas, foreign policy, international relations, when making their voting decisions?
Well, obviously, as your question suggests, I think they should be very clearly. You know, I think part of it is we all recognize that there's a bit of, I won't say it's always war weariness, but I think people are tired of what they see as open-ended engagements in different places around the world. But what I would argue is that American engagement has provided tangible benefits back here economically, diplomatically, and from a security perspective. So the fact that people don't necessarily draw the connection between the two is something that we need our leaders on both sides of the aisle to take up. And quite frankly, that's one of the reasons why I'm here in town. Organizations like the Committee on Foreign Relations, I think, are playing their very important role of educating the public on the benefits of American engagement and why it's not only good for the places where we're working, but it's very good for the American people. It's a bargain.
Mm-hmm. Oh, during your time here, what else are you interested in finding out from Iowans, especially during this election year?
Well, the big thing is to listen more about what's on voters' minds, because Again, I come from just one state over, but we are living in a time where there's frustration with the institutions of government and political institutions here. And so I think it's important for leaders both sides of the aisle, all levels of government, to be spending more time listening closely to constituents, listening closely to community leaders about the challenges that they see and the opportunities that they see, and then working together to try to forge some long-term answers.
Mm-hmm. I know this isn't your area of expertise, and we have just about a minute left. Comment on the Brexit vote, how that may impact the world and the United States.
Well, I think the Brexit vote, as much as anything, shows that they're facing in many parts of Europe some of the crises of faith in government institutions that we're seeing back here. And that, I think, was at the heart of the Brexit vote. I think there was disillusionment with some of the elites in the EU on the regional level. And I think that was really what the Brexit vote was all about. It was an expression of not just anger, but disillusionment. What really is important is what happens from here on out. The European Union will remain a key ally of the U.S. The U.K. will remain a key ally of the U.S. And I think what we have to do is find ways to work with European leaders to make sure that those relationships stay strong.
Okay, thank you very much for spending time with us. Former Ambassador Mark Green, now president of the International Republican Institute in Iowa, in Des Moines specifically, to be part of the Des Moines Committee on Foreign Relations speaker series. Title of his talk, America's Role in the World. Thank you for stepping into our studio, Ambassador Green.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon, with help from Gray Lanta. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. We also had help today from John Pemble in Des Moines. Politics Wednesday tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in over the noon hour. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.